With college basketball, you're working with so many people. I've mental thing that people don't really take into account, like, is the mental aspect of how much work you're putting in, like from November to mid-February, burnout's gonna happen. I was going straight, no like days off, 8 to 10 hours, like 10 to 12 hours a day, almost to the point of like no return.
Hey, what's up, everybody? GP13 here, welcoming a man you might all know, Giants Badgers from Twitter. My friend Aaron. He's been a prolific runner, or sorry, mover, podcast guest, everything. So this is, happy to have you on. Always enjoy talking to you, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it, GP.
So we first connected. I remember we first connected over Twitter, which is how I meet all my friends now. Unfortunately, or fortunately, honestly, made a lot of good friends. And we just like chatted on the phone, and I just remember like after being like, oh, that was like 2.5 hours, and time flew by. And I think it's just like you're so engrossed in the space, and you, through knowing so many people, you have so much knowledge at a very young age. How you're still in college, correct?
Yeah, I'm a senior.
Senior in college. And yet I feel like you feel like talking to like a 15-year vet in the space. Like, what's it been like? How'd you get into it? And B, how did you get so well connected so quickly?
Yeah, I'd say the first thing is obviously we kind of come from a little different backgrounds, or like sides of the community where there's like, I'd say, the sharp betting community and the EV betting community, where you're kind of in the middle, where I'm more on the sharp side. Most of your community is probably like more on the EV side, where they're devigging, using odds jam, not odds jam exactly, but odds jam equivalents to be able to like monetize sports betting, where we're using more model-based origination to optimize our returns. So first thing, a big difference distinguishing is your EV betting. You're a lot more betting by yourself or with a small group, where you can do it by yourself, for yourself, where sharp betting, mostly it's starting off with working with sharps. For example, one thing is to differentiate between legals and like your standard run-of-the-mill book or bookie, and then offshores. Where with the sharp betting space, you're more doing like account handoffs. So you're giving an account to a sharp, he's optimizing your returns for you, and then you get a weekly your weekly money, whether it's up or down, and then you decide that weekly split. And then from there, kind of moves up the chain where you start doing more and more work if you want to. Some people just like the casual dealing with the bookie and then collecting and then giving the split back to the sharp. And then once I basically upgraded from account handoffs, I started working with the originators themselves, from getting down on legals in person, offshore, and then on PPH, my own PPHs. And then, yeah, just reaching out and working with people. Once you kind of get going with the portion of, okay, you've become reliable, you have liquidity, you can do this, then people want to start working with you, and you kind of grow from there, I guess, is the best way to answer it.
So you started off basically, yeah, just giving an account or two to a sharp. Is this just someone you knew in real life who was a sharp bettor, and they were like, hey, like I'm looking for outs, or just did you somehow stumble on gambling Twitter? And
It was in the RAS Discord, which is now in a
yes.
blaze, as they're going into despair, as some might say.
Yeah, pour one out for RAS Discord. Come join the Discord. Yeah, man. I think it's an interesting story, because there was that tweet. it was something like, what are the three things that you would tell like a losing better to do? And someone was like, and it sparked that whole like get CLV debate between Kirk and AD. But the other interesting one was when BA Analytics, MLB Psychic said, give accounts. And it's like, I actually was like, yeah, that's probably the best advice. You know, it's going to be really hard for you to go from square to sharp. Not that it's impossible. You know, everyone's basically done it. You don't start sharp, but like, it's really easy to give an account to a sharp, right?
Yeah. I mean, if that's like my opinion, it would 100% be give account. It's just because like it's just probably it's the quickest way to learn. And then from there, you can kind of understand betting tendencies of the sharps. And then you're like, okay, what are some things that they're doing to become sharp? Okay. One, really, really obvious, betting early. That's number one. Because as you get closer to tip lines, become more efficient. That's why limits open up. And so unless you're picking off bad numbers, which is effectively EV betting, right? That's the crux of EV betting, is picking off bad numbers, which gets you limited quicker. So then you're gonna have to run through accounts. But betting early, you can bet at small limits at like Sharpbooks, Pinnacle, Bookmaker, Bet Online, and still win if you're good. And you can, that's where it kind of goes into that CLV debate. Okay. If you're good, you should get CLV. If you're not, you don't get CLV. Very simple.
So essentially you're starting off by putting yourself in a position to see good order flow. It's like how sportsbooks want sharp customers.
You know?
It's because they want to see, and you get sharp customers by giving them accounts. You get connected to people by working with them, you know? And it's like, it seems like it's a lot easier to learn when you're in this like flow of information that's constantly kind of each day updating, refreshing. You're talking to smart people, like instead of just sitting down and, you know, opening up VS Code and deciding like you want to beat NBA, you know, totals because you know the NBA, you know, nothing, of course, do that at some point, but you know, there's ways to tip the scales in your favor. And I feel like giving accounts to sharps, creating those relationships, seeing how they're betting, like you said, makes so much sense. So much. But some people, you know, I don't know. Why do you think some people just don't do that? They're not connected, or they want to have control over their bets, or, you know, why are more people not doing that?
Ego.
Yeah.
Ego is a disastrous thing when betting, I think. Especially a bunch of different reasons. A, you don't have an edge, right? You might not have an edge. You might not know it. You think you do, and you're just like betting and just losing. And you're like, this got to turn. This has to turn. Like, I'm due. I'm due. The other one, like ego, and then it's also, okay, you've had an edge. When does that edge dry up? You're assuming that edge is still there, but you're due to your ego. And if you didn't have an ego, maybe you'd be like, okay, maybe I don't have an edge. And then you wouldn't be punting money. And especially like people still bet at the end of the year, I'd argue for baseball, like personally, I'm probably going to stop in June. Market just becomes almost unbeatable. Unless you're picking off bad numbers, but that's just a lot of time. And just because of limits and stuff, it's really not really worth it. But it's not an ego thing, really. We can't beat it. What's the point of running an 1% ROI? Zero.
Agree, because oftentimes you don't really know if you have a 1% ROI or a negative 2%. So if you have like a 7%, then maybe you have a 10%, maybe you have a 4%. It's still not bad, you know?
Exactly.
Right. No, I also hear that about baseball. You know, I'm not a baseball bettor myself, but one advantage of your situation, which is like being connected with a lot of sharp originators who are playing different sports, I feel like you have a pretty good pulse on where the good opportunities are sport to sport more so than other people? Like, has that colored, you know, your perception on the sports betting market and maybe even like push you to investigate certain sports more if you see, you know, bigger edges?
Yeah. I mean, there are certain markets that we like to attack, that I know are much more beatable than others. Just because they're smaller, especially if an originator is smaller and doesn't take a large percentage of our split, those markets are really, really good because I get enough, the originator gets enough, and no one's really upset. Once you get into these bigger markets, you're pumping a lot of money, and the originators want a lot of return, and you're running at a really small ROI, and you're just kind of shaking your head. Why it like works, why you're doing this, because if you do an EV calculation, then you put it into like a variance calculator, you could be losing for a while without winning, and it just gets, it's very taxing mentally.
Yeah. Do you think that so variance calculators are always, poker players like use them, every poker player I know like will calc their variance and like see what like the one out of a 10,000 biggest downswing is going to be. But I don't see that in sports betting a lot. And I think like, especially in the plus EV community, I don't know if they're really thinking about like the absolute nut low downswings, but it seems like that's something that you're thinking about more.
I wouldn't say I think about it. It's more so when you experience, how much more can it go? Yeah. Like if you're losing a lot, I guess that's when it becomes valuable. Is it really like a 1 out of 10,000 event, or is it more of a 1 out of 200 and we just don't have an edge? Which is more so along the lines of, if I do think it's, if it says the variance, and it is that 1 out of 10,000 event, I'd argue it's probably one out of like 200, and yep, you just edge is a lot smaller than you were calculating. So that's more so where I'm like potentially using it, is to see that our edge isn't as big as it like proclaims to be.
And you're working with originators here who believe they have an edge, but how does it, you know, I assume you've cut originators off who think they probably still have an edge, but you are less certain. Like, what's that process like? How does that kind of go down?
Yeah, I've cut originators off. I've cut off well-known groups who are very widely respected. I
shot them all out.
No. but there are a couple really well-known respected people I've cut out. For various reasons, one being I just couldn't take off the time. One was like, at this point with college basketball, you're working with so many people. I've thing that people don't really take into account, like, is the mental aspect of how much work you're putting in, like from November to mid February, burnouts can happen. I was going straight, no like days off, 8 to 10 hours, like 10 to 12 hours a day, almost to the point of like no return. And I just had to take like a week off just to mentally get back into that. But I've cut off originators for various reasons. One, playing uber small markets, and it's not worth it, and they weren't winning, which makes no sense.
That's a terrible combo. I mean,
Jamaican like third league soccer totals. And
do you even want that if it wins?
It's only available, I mean, if it's an already a limited account, it doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah,
like it's just extra change when I'm right bored. That was right the reason why I was doing it. But I knew what they were doing. What they were doing was like devigging Penny and devigging Chris, and then saying, okay, let's bet it at DraftKings.
So like that doesn't feel like originating to me. That's what we do.
No, but that was a portion of their operation that they were sending out. They do their own origination on other stuff like NBA second halves. That's like what they're originating specifically. Tennis, they originate a couple other sports, but like Jamaican second league soccer, how you can't really originate that, in my opinion.
Right, you'd have to like send someone to collect stats from the game, and then you could actually probably win a lot, but there's not, I'm sure the limits are tiny. But I'm curious about two things there. First thing is, when somebody comes to you and gives you a strategy that is clear, it's clearly like a market-based strategy, do you just say like, hey, look, you know, that's not what I'm looking for, it's something I could do myself? Or, you know, is there some nuance to it if you think they have a really good read on the market and like a certain, you know, what certain books are sharp in that market? Do you ever take, you know, market-based strategies?
So most of our stuff isn't market-based strategies. The only reason why I give that as an example is because I figured it out after what they were doing. That's one thing, as going back of like giving accounts, stuff like that, is it's about the tendencies, how they bet. This, you can almost reverse engineer most of the things that they're betting if you're really paying attention, which you should be if you want to become sharp and you want to win. Most of it is becoming, okay, what are they doing to bet? How can I figure out how they're betting so I can properly analyze the bets, right? So most people don't come with market-based strategies. That was the only one that I actually have. I'd be open to it if it was a bigger market and you're beating it at post. Again, if you're beating at post, like, congratulations, you are a really good bettor.
Rich.
Rich. But I don't even know if that's true. People say that, right? But you, if you're beating at post, you're running at like a 1% ROI, a 0.5% ROI. So you're going to be coming through the swings like a crazy man. So you're going to overbet, underbet, and you might not even win, just even with a 1% ROI. I mean, from order flow and stuff, I do believe it's possible to win at post.
Only for major market, we're talking like
anything NFL. But NFL.
Anything but NFL. Okay. Like EPL.
I don't really do soccer, so I can't really speak on that. But I know people that do win, beating Penny Live Soccer.
Yeah. Okay. You beat anything live, right? Like NFL too.
Penny is harder to beat live. Chris is harder to beat live for like various, well, mainly because it auto moves.
Yeah.
Not because of anything else. That's true.
It's crazy. Like, that actually adds a lot of protection to these market making books that, you know, the rec books just don't have.
Yeah. But I think you can beat college basketball at post. I think you can beat NBA at post. NHL, I don't really have much experience. Baseball, probably I'll say no. But that's only if you have all the information that like someone that's moving has. I would not say like a regular run of a mill person can beat that. Like, that's the nuance to it. If you have the order flow of what people are betting, if you see a lot of people betting the same thing constantly, it's like, okay, this is a good bet. Even if it doesn't move, why is everyone on this? The only thing that can happen is like they're betting off screen. So most likely you'll be good.
Yep. And when you're dissecting order flow, like, that's, I think when we talked on the phone, you said that you were originating a couple maybe smaller markets. Mm-hmm. Did that kind of come along out of your curiosity for working with these people, dissecting how they work? Because it seems like you're kind of like this hybrid now. You know, you have different strategies that you're using. It's not just all moving in order flow based.
Yeah. I do soccer myself, or not soccer, tennis myself. Sorry. I was thinking about the EPL. Tennis myself, and then European basketball. There are a couple angles that I have for both those sports, which the ROI isn't crazy. It's 2-3%, but I mean, 2-3%, pretty close at post. Penny and Chris is like solid.
So now I want to talk more about like the account management part of it, because I think it'll help everybody, not just people who are moving, but like, mm-hmm. you know, because part of your goal is to get the max value per account, right?
Right.
It's like get accounts mm-hmm. and then make accounts worth, you know, step one, get accounts. Step two, make them mm-hmm. worth more money. And that's kind of right. the multiplication that puts money in your pocket. Like, let's go through first getting PPH accounts, getting offshore accounts, because I think a lot of people who are listening right now may have a DraftKings account and a FanDuel account that they're limited mm-hmm. on, and they've heard about offshore, but since they came to betting in the last year or two post legalization, they were never in that world, let alone, you know, not even maybe playing on Bet Online and Bovada, definitely not playing through PPH and, you know, some of the popular skins.
Right. Offshores, it's mainly crypto based. So you got BetUS, BetOnline, Bookmaker, Bovada, Lovig, probably missing a couple. MyBookie, there you go. I think that those are the main ones that people use. BetOnline's are pretty square for the most part. For MyBookie, BetUS, Bovada or Bodog if you're in Canada. And then you got the sharper ones, BetOnline, Bookmaker. And from there, you can kind of devig if you're going to EV bet. But a lot of the times, best option is to take a promotion and just bet both sides, and you'll be pretty good. That's kind of another way I started, was turning accounts and running through promotions.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like people do with legals, right? So
yeah,
you got like 750 with a $1,000 deposit. Rollover is like 5 to 7.5x. So you have to, as I discussed in Circles Off, have to run like a negative 10% ROI just to not break even, which even if you're betting at post, it's just run bad. Like, right. Even if you're the worst better, coin flip it. You'll be okay.
It's almost like, especially if you're a terrible better, might as well bet at post, because
yeah,
at least you'll exactly. be losing like 5%.
And then PPH wise, it's like, okay, you're betting at like a ubet.ag every game 247, beat the lines.ag, where like if you're in college, whoever's in college and bet in college, right? Your frat's got bookies, your anyone, like there's so many. And they're just booking your action and flipping losers into the losers pay the winners, basically. And then there's a little, like if you're winning a lot, you'll eventually get cut off, just like your legals. They'll scream at you. The only problem is a lot of times you don't get paid. So you have to incorporate that into your strategy. For if you're like arbitraging, it's really hard to arbitrage in PPH, right? Because you might win the winning side and you're going to lose the losing side. You'll pay out the losing side, and then your winning side doesn't get paid. So you can't arbitrage on a PPH unless you 100% know you're going to get paid. Like there's a certain ones that you know you get paid just from consistency, or you know that the person's good. So I'm like a penny right. skin. You're going to get paid. A Chris skin, you're going to get paid. Like 411, you're going to get yep. paid. So those aren't really concerns. So, but again, if you're arbing against those, most likely just better to take the oppo side and just keep the position.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, I mean, those are completely different. It's like three different worlds. You got legals, you got offshores, and you got PPH. So it takes some time to understand each one. Account management wise, is it really good to fire? We've been firing a lot of like small markets into PPHs. Probably not for best account management, but if you're running at a 25-30% ROI, it's kind of hard to say no.
Because even if you do get rolled, you can get rolled you can get rolled a lot and still make money at that ROI. Yeah.
But also there's things to consider if you're on a PPH, right? So you have to, and a thing to manage is how much you actually win. Some yep. people just run it up and they're like, okay, I'm just going to run it up to whatever. But it's probably not best to do that, because then you look at the flip side. but if you don't get paid. So we try to cap our max wins at like 1500 a week, 1000, 2000 a week, and go through a lot of small accounts to like slowly add up 1000 a week for 15 accounts, 20 accounts. Obviously, you're not going to win 1000 every single week, and you're not going to win every single account the same amount because they are different odds providers like you have on your FanDuel DK, etc. It slowly adds up. So you just, that's like something to consider.
And yeah, this is why, like, I feel like it's, everybody says, don't bet futures on a PPH, you know?
It's like, yes. That's rule number one. I see an account that I'm given with futures on PPH. The first thing I text him, what the fuck were you thinking?
And to be,
I was like, those are probably all going to void. You're probably not going to get paid on them. I hope they all lose. And if they ask for money, do not pay them. Unless they kick us and they pay us, right?
Well, yeah.
It's like 50-50 split whether you get kicked and paid or kicked and not paid. So if they kick and pay us, fine, pay out those people. You can agree with them. So there's two ways to go about it. Depends on if you want to be scummy or not. I always opt for the route of you treat them how you'd be treated, right? If they treat you shitty, do the same thing back. I don't think that's anything wrong with that. But if they're treating you well, do honor the bets, the R bets, like it's considered. Sometimes the book, depending on like the validity, they'll ask you if they are good or not. Like they'll ask you, okay, do you want these bets? They'll give you the option. So you can see if it's a good bet or not. And if yes or no, like last year, I'd say when RAS was really hot, I got kicked off a book betting RAS. And the guy asked me, do you want these bets to be placed? Of course I wanted them. I had 3%, I had 3 points of CLV on every single one. I went at 1 and 3, but whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, sometimes they do ask that, sometimes they don't. But yeah, rule number one, never bet a future on PPH unless it's settling within a week. Like for Super Bowl, we don't bet Super Bowl stuff the week prior on PPH or 2 weeks prior. So like if it's Monday through Sunday and then the Super Bowl is the next Sunday, we don't bet that on that the week. The first week, we'll bet stuff in the second week because we don't know if those accounts that we're betting into are even available the second week.
That makes sense. So are there, when you're talking about like betting RAS, it reminded me of this hilarious post you had on Twitter, which was like you arguing, or like you, your guy arguing with their PPH about like getting kicked off. It's like, oh, I was buying picks, and they're like, you can't buy picks, you know?
Yeah.
Like, of course you hear like, it would be funny to hear some of some of your absolute most insane, bookies like getting rolled stories. But also it's important to know like how do you handle, what kind of action are you giving PPH, accounts that might not be as toxic as others? Because the risk with getting the axe at PPH is a little more than at illegal, because you get limited at illegal, you'll almost always get paid at PPH. When you get the axe, it sometimes means, you know, you get rolled. So, you know, what are you doing besides money won with the bets you're giving PPH?
So for the stuff that bets wise, it's kind of a variety. It depends on the skin. Like we know what skins do are good for major markets. We know what skins are good for props. We know what skins are good for this. We got good for that. So that's an important factor is to understand.
When you say good for, it's like they'll take props and not be super pissed.
That and which skins are just like better for that stuff.
Oh yeah.
So like an account's tailored to like those specific things. Just because we know the ROI for props or the ROI for major markets. Like if the ROI for major markets is a lot better on the skin, we'll most likely be playing major markets. And if the ROI for like our live stuff, which is really good, is good on the skin and the major markets suck, we'll only play live. If the ROI on props on the skin is really good, we'll play only props. So that's things to consider. You're going to get kicked off regardless. It's about monetizing as much as you can get as quickly as possible, in my opinion. So there's two routes you can go. You can either do the 500 a week for 20 weeks, right? okay, there you get 10K. Or you do 1,000 a week for 10 weeks. Or you do 2,000 a week for 5 weeks.
Obviously, do you think there's any...
There's not a like obvious answer. Like I've had books that I don't know why he still takes my action. I've won 15 weeks in a row taking 5K a week, and he's paid me every single time, no questions asked.
I mean, do you think he's betting your stuff?
If he wants to bet the props that move that we're betting into him, I'll go be it. If he wants to bet overnights at 3 a.m. when we're betting overnight college basketball. I mean, if he's up 24/7, he's got a good moneymaker, but I don't think there's a possible way, unless he's betting bad numbers, which is very possible. Which I mean, he'd still be winning, right? Don't get me wrong. If he wakes up and it's we're betting overnight, like 2 o'clock in the morning, and he's waking up at 7 a.m, and the numbers are still probably pretty close, and he could probably get a decent number, losing like maybe 1% ROI, 1.5%, he'll be doing okay. Like he'll still be winning. It just depends on how much he can bet.
Yeah. And what are you looking out for in situations like that where you know the stuff that you're sending out is kind of getting steamed? You know, is that calc'd in? Is that something that you're dealing with a lot? Or is it, you know, because you're hitting the PPHs and some off-screen stuff, it's not been a big problem for you?
It's always a problem because PPH will steam. And when if the back end sees like 50 accounts getting hit on like a Buckeye, then it's going to be steamed regardless. It doesn't really matter what I do on my end. We just kind of avoid the market making books because those are obvious steamers. Like those are going to steam regardless, unless you're betting into like a brand new account and they don't know.
Right.
I mean, you're going to steam Penny, you're going to steam Bookmaker regardless because of all the auto movers. But like Circa, you're not going to steam regardless. They don't auto move on your action. So that's something to like consider.
That is an important distinction because, you know, I think a lot of people have Circa and Chris and Penny on the left side of their, you know, Spank Odds screen or whatnot, but they do operate slightly differently. And I'm actually interested in how you talk about the market making books because, you know, I think the Plus EV community right now, they're like, we DVIG Penny or we DVIG Chris and we bet DraftKings, which like, I feel like we'll always win. So it's not that it's bad, but from hearing you talk, it's like the smartest people, you know, in the world, the best bettors are trying to avoid moving Penny and moving Chris when they can. So, you know, how do you see Penny and Chris and Circa? We can also talk about as sources of truth, like, and you can even segment it early in the week or like a while before tip and then buy tip.
Yeah. So early. So the night prior, I'll get like for an example, I think on Bookmaker or Chris, because I only use 411, which is the Chris equivalent, because it's a credit book, it's just easier, and I can get a shit ton of credit without really issues. Same with Penny, I use a Penny skin, I don't use Penny because I'm in the United States. Same thing, so. For 411, I believe it's 550 or to win 500 for a college basketball total. Pennies maybe about the same, maybe a little less. And then Circa, I actually have no clue. I don't even know if they're open overnight. I don't think they are.
I don't know either.
So, and then limits progressively increase. Nothing sharp a prior, my opinion.
Yeah. Important. Obviously, you want to look.
But someone could disagree with me and say they are somewhat sharp, right? Anyone who's betting overnights is most likely not betting into Chris, Penny, because you can get 500 overnight pretty much anywhere.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
You can go to MGM and in person, like I can go into MGM and go to a kiosk and get 500 on a total overnight. Why in the hell would I go to Chris or Penny? The only reason why is because I'm too lazy to go to MGM.
Right. And it would have to be the conditions of like, you're sharp enough to model an opener, because to like bet an opener, you need to have a model because like you're saying the market's not efficient. you also have a bankroll that's not big enough yet to want to bet more than 500, at least really want to bet more than 500. And then, like you said, also going to be a little too lazy to go maybe even get a better number at a kiosk or at a legal, which, you know, there's probably a better number out there. So you're right. Like it feels like it's, I'm sure it happens, but it does feel like a special set of circumstances.
Yeah. The only, like if you're seeing an overnight steam in one direction, I'd be cautious.
Like that's intentional.
Yeah, most likely. Even if you see an overnight steam really quickly, or not overnight, just like a one of them steam really quickly, unless it's really close to tip. Even then, I'm always cautious. You can use them as source of truth, sure, but I would always land on the air of caution. You never know who's trying to do what. I guess is the question. It's like sometimes we intentionally get negative CLV.
Like you'll bet a number and then you'll move the market against you so you can protect the account.
Yeah.
And so that means that essentially the price you're paying to move the market is super cheap compared to the amount you're getting down on the other account.
Yeah. Sometimes the originators will do that. Yeah. It's like a generosity thing.
Right.
Because they get filled pretty well. Between me and a couple other people that I know for the movers, they'll move the market on our behalves, move it 2 points, and then they'll tell us, okay, we were the one that moved it. You want more? You can bet more off screen. We'll take more at the better number. But we're trying to protect your accounts.
Do you think that, and it's like first order, second order thinking there, because I think what everybody would think in that instances, oh, I'm going to move a number to make it better for myself and then smash it after it moves. But I feel like that's more obvious and like it's less, it's more likely to result in, you know, quickly getting limited, where the other way around, you know, it certainly seems like it would protect accounts more, even though you're not artificially giving yourself a better number, which of course helps your ROI. Like if you know that you have an edge, then you can protect the account and make it a lot more valuable. But you have to know that whoever's evaluating that account does care mainly about CLV. Like I'm sure that you've run into spots that care a ton about CLV, don't care at all. Like you're working with so many people who are so many different people that are booking your action. Like you must have seen every metric or no metrics like matter at some point.
Yeah. The first story before I even did anything with like sharps or anything that I've done was like points bet. I think I placed 4 wagers at post on CBB, 300 a pop. Like I didn't even use an odds screen. I didn't use anything to evaluate the bets. I just looked at the bets. I was like, all right, these look good. I know which ones they were.
Yeah.
It was a Dayton under, which Dayton played really slow that year. I don't know why it was at the number they posted it at. It was like a November December game, and like I'm quite confident you can go into November December with some semblance of a basketball knowledge if you know ball, that you can beat those markets with no model.
Yeah,
if you understand teams and some like the transfer changes, probably can beat the markets. So I knew Dayton was a slower team from previous years, and I was like, this should not be a 140 game, 141 game. This should be like a 132 game. It won, limited, 3 bets on 3 different teams. No CLV, no nothing. So that's where it's like, okay, how are these teams? How are you getting limited, right?
That's kind of wild. That's one of the most aggressive, even for points.
It was probably Sproth. It was probably Shipper.
Yeah, but
I was texting Sproth, and I was like, "What the fuck did you do with points?" But I don't know if anyone here really knows who Sproth's better is. He's more on the EV like trolley side, like Seville side. He worked at points betting. He was a points bet trader. Now he does professional betting himself with a group. And so I texted him. I was like, so what are the metrics really that these companies are using to limit you? And he's like, honestly, nowadays, I don't really know. And he left like 2 years ago. It's so widespread. I got limited on FanDuel before I even did anything. I was betting, like, I don't even remember what I was betting. I had like a 7-8% ROI on FanDuel. It was like live props and stuff. I was up like 8K on 120, 130K, whatever, 10K. And so I wasn't really killing them. No CLV, no nothing. It was an angle I saw.
It's live,
yeah. At the end of 2022 basketball season for the NBA, what I noticed was Jalen Green would start really slow every single game and just go for 30. So I'd filed live bet his over first couple minutes of the game for the max. And it didn't lose for 7-8 games in a row. And I didn't know what the reason why I got limited. I still don't know, because the account wasn't up crazy. I was getting no CLV. It wasn't like I was hitting him for 2K a pop on these Jalen Green stuff. And I got limited. So I really have no idea, which is why I get confused on how accounts get limited.
I do too. The Jalen Green one's wild, because it's like, don't they just think you're like a huge Jalen Green, you know?
I don't know. I probably took like I said, I was just betting that straight for like a week or like a couple of weeks, and it was just limited, and now I can't, like, now I'm 10% limited of FanDuel, maybe 1%. I don't know what the actual number is. I can barely do anything.
On FanDuel, you can log out and then type in like 9999.
Yeah, I don't even check my account. It's a pointless.
Yeah, thing. Like right.
I'll just get someone else to bet. Like, that's not really an issue. So I'll use the one I use to like track games is Bet365. I think their UI is the best.
I agree with that. For golf,
Just overall, basketball, baseball, tennis, UI is the best, even though their lines are pretty shitty. Like, if you're gonna like live ARB or live trade games, just go to, if you have a Bet365, just go to Bet365, compare it against Penny, and then you'll make, I don't know how quickly they'll limit you, but you could definitely make a shit ton of money. It's almost as bad as MGM, maybe worse.
Yeah, Bet365 special category of bad in terms of like I guess you'd call it data science or trading. I don't know what they're doing there. They're obviously not trying to be the sharpest in the world, but
yeah, but I don't know how they make money. Serious, honest to God.
Well, they're so huge in Europe. I don't even think we understand like the true nature of like the Bet365 customer. You know, I don't know what the big differences are between the European and the American customers, but they absolutely crush in Europe.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's one thing. So, I mean, as you grow professionally or personally, however you want to determine betting, right? Whether it's professional or personal, and you grow and get contacts. So my personal Bet365, I got like 50K profit, I think, before they limited.
That's good. That's really good.
Really good. But listen to what it was before you, it'll be really surprising how I got that high. So this was like a last summer-ish when I started moving. I did free roll deals to start just because they wanted a lot, and I didn't really know the space as I do now. And free roll deals aren't great. So it was actually a great deal for me, like when I look back on it, just because of the variance that we took. We were betting AAA baseball last summer. We lost like 25K. So on a free roll, that, who gives a fuck, right?
Sure.
And then from there, I was like, I'm going to pass doing this. I don't really like it. We're losing a lot of money. So we bet the 20, we bet the, we lose like 20, 25K. And then I bet props into this bet, my bet 365.
Is this your own or is this?
This is my personal bet 365.
Or no, sorry, your own props.
Like no, live betting or this is not my own props. This is a props. Betting baseball into it, and baseball bet 365 lines are really bad. Mm-hmm. Worse than other stuff that they have, which is really surprising. Like straight arbs to multiple other books. I don't know how no one's been catching it. Probably bad to just say the edge, but whatever. I can't get anything down anyways. Bet 365 props, they don't. But I was getting 2,000, 1,500 on outs on the MLB.
And they were
arbs.
That's crazy.
We didn't bet the other side.
Is this when they just launched, like maybe in the US? It must have been.
Last summer. So yeah, some of these were arbs, some of these not. So what would do, it would be like, all right, we're auto accepting 500 or auto accepting 300, and then the rest will be yours. Like whether we decline or accept it.
Mm-hmm. That was your deal?
That was bet 365. It was like, okay, I want to
Okay.
They'll decline or accept. They'll auto accept like up to 500 or up to 300, depending on like what the market, or up to 1,000, depending on the market. And then the rest is up to trader discretion.
Right.
So we were betting, like call it or MLB like outs. We moved the market 150 cents because it was like minus 135. It closed like minus 285. And bet 365 was significantly worse. This one was a slight R, but then the market just also moved significantly after the fact. We got like 1,500 a WNBA prop at bet 365.
Wow.
So anyone who had any, and they were letting this account just go. Sometimes it'd be like, the thing was, sometimes it'd be like, okay, you can get 2K on this WNBA prop. Sometimes you can get 300 or 150, depending on the market. So if it was widely available-ish, they gave us 2K. And if it was less, it was probably 150. But I ran it up to like 50K. And then I have someone who's in the bet 365 office who's like a trader. And I said,
that you know personally?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, can you look up this account? What was the reason why I got limited? And he used that you were betting Steam. No. I was the Steam. That's like, his notes were betting Steam, betting props. Sure, betting props, absolutely true. The other one, betting Steam, it was me. I was the Steam. So they didn't you can't even really, you can't even evaluate.
Yeah.
You can't even evaluate that. I was the Steam. So how can you say I was betting Steam? I wasn't Steam chasing. I moved the mark.
No, and this is an interesting conversation. Like, I do think originating gives you extra longevity for sure. But there's been times when I'm against the entire market, get no CLV, and like over the course of an account, I give bets to the account that are all like parlays that get no CLV, and you'll still get limited if you're winning. Like, you know, it's not the magic ticket to play the same DraftKings account for the rest of your life, but it is the magic ticket for like being able to go and work with someone like you and, you know, get money down, you know, at multiple different markets and, you know, multiple different books if you're originating. But it's not like you're going to make every account last forever just because like you're not steam chasing.
Yeah, there's no... There's a, in my opinion, a big misnomer. I see it every single day almost, that originating, like you said, elongates accounts. I just say that's just not true.
You think not even at all?
Maybe 5 to 10%. Okay. It depends on what you're originating, right? If you're betting NFL at post, your account's probably going to be lasted forever. Good job. You probably lose a shit ton of money too. So if you can afford that, there's a completely different ballgame. There's a person who's one of my whales, right? Who gets down for me on some of my stuff. I look at his FanDuel, he's like 2.5x. I'm like, holy shit, you are a golden chicken, right? He claims he wins. I was like, let's check your P&L, right?
Yeah. You can on FanDuel, right? It's easy.
Yeah, you can check. -$37K. And I'm like, God, I love you.
And that's not that bad. For 2.5X limits, like, -$37K is, like, not terrible.
I don't know what his total handle is, though. So I don't don't know what the – but I know the reason why. It's who's betting. He's bet – his model, to be clear, not an actual, like – written in Python or R or Excel. His model
all here, baby.
I will say, if there was a model that I'd use, even though he loses, I don't know what else he's betting, because he also bets at Chris at Post. I've seen his numbers there. It could just be bad variance at FanDuel, which is fine. I honestly
don't win at that. Does he win at Chris at Post? Yeah. Holy shit. Okay. So this is, he has something going for him.
I don't think he says. I think it's slightly bad variance at FanDuel. I don't think he's that. But he's willing to bet NFL at Post, which is.
I mean, that's, like you said, that's a golden chicken, especially if you bet NFL at Post and are arguably breaking even at least.
Yeah,
you know, that's huge.
His model, he's a former book, right? So he knows tendencies of like bettors pretty well, I'd say. I still think he loses slightly, but to have a 2.5x FanDuel, I can basically, what I'm basically going to do is limit the account and then give him another one and then just let him run with it.
Yeah.
Which is like a smart, is a best case scenario, but I don't think he loses that much. And his model, which everyone's going to hate me in the sharp community, everyone's going to hate me after what I'm about to say. I'm prefacing that. He fades public.
But how does he tell me about him? Because now I remember who you're talking about. But how does he do that? Because I like the
No. It's not who you think. You have no clue who it is.
Okay.
This is like a completely guy off Twitter.
No. But he texts his friends, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. You told me about this guy. Yeah, I love this. Yeah. Okay, tell this story.
Yeah. So basically, there's a FanDuel location that we have in person. He also has his online, and then he has his Chris. He doesn't know like anything about betting, so he doesn't know if he bets into Bookmaker or Chris that he's auto going to move the market, which is why he's like, why? Give me plays. I want plays. Because he knows we're going to win. Even though he likes to bet his own stuff. But basically what he does is there's a couple guys who we both know. This guy's like 50 years old. Owns a construction company, uber wealthy, really good guy. And so what he does, he texts his friend, like people that we know who we know suck at betting. They're horrible.
Yeah.
They'll consistently, like, they're the definition of a 40% coin flip. Even though it's not a coin flip, they run at like 40 to 45% at Post on whatever sport.
And but so your this boy is fading does. This guy as a strategy, he, right?
His yeah, I have text. He's like, our boy Alex is on the Clippers tonight. We were fading, or he's on like Houston. We're fading. Yeah, like the Houston Cougars. We're fading, and he's doing well. He and he bets at Post. You're going to become like a trader for a sports book, although that's most true. People don't like trade sports books. Like if you really want to get in the industry, that is a great way to start, whether you like want to acknowledge that or not. I do think that's a great way to like an entrance into the sports betting space is becoming a trader or something at a sports book.
And I think it like I agree with that, and I you know of course I like to shit on traders sometimes. You know, whatever, it's part of the fun of the game, but like a trader sees order flow just like Aaron sees order flow. Like those entry level jobs where you get to see sharp order flow, very helpful. No matter which,
or even if you're a ticket, this is going to sound like below your pay grade, right? But tickets, like writing tickets and being like a supervisor at a sports book, is very valuable. And here's why: a couple locations I go to, they won't give me limits, right? They won't give me good limits. But they gave me great limits. I was getting a lot to begin with, and then limits got cut, and we're like, all right, next location. But I've built those relationships with those people. Those people know I win. Then they text me, and they're like, okay, what do you like today? What are you seeing? And then they have their order flow. You have your order flow, and you can compare.
Very smart. Very smart.
So
go learn. That's a great way to learn and make connections. It is, like
you might not, you're not going to make a lot of money. It's something that you do like on the weekends, right? You become a ticket writer at like FanDuel or MGM. Do it on the weekends for a couple hours. A lot of the guys, they're my runners now. I won't say who, but yeah, there are ticket writers who run for me at other
locations. That's a great runner FanDuel. Because they know how they know exactly how this all works. It's perfect.
Yeah, so they run for me at other locations. Not with, because if you work at FanDuel, you obviously can't bet at FanDuel, but you can bet at other locations. Another right. example where you. This order, the order flow example is a great thing to just continuously like drain and like pound someone's head with. Is at one of the locations that I have, a guy wanted to bet like Swedish basketball.
Okay.
Plus 1700 money line, four people for them, like 5K each. They took it. I don't know why, because that's immediately red flag.
Yeah, yeah. Immediately, you're like, okay.
Why would you take this bet? FanDuel Trader said, yeah, it's good to go. The plus 1700 won by like 20. They were brought in ringers to the game, like from other teams. They got, and it was like these guys, boys from high school. And so what do you think all the guys behind the counter did?
Hopefully bet
they
it.
They saw it and they bet a lot of money, like
yep.
multiple paychecks.
Yep.
And
Yeah.
I mean, that's not illegal.
No, it's not illegal. What I'm saying, I was going to say, you know, this is also one of my problems with like, you know, like Kelly and whatnot. Like sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, you gotta YOLO the paycheck on the Swedish basketball that just right. got bet for 5K at plus 1700. Like sometimes that situation presents itself.
There's things you can't put a value to is my point.
Right, exactly.
Learning these things, the order flow, knowing what people are betting. Another thing, if you're in like a supervisor at FanDuel, you obviously talk directly to the traders. So you see the entire list of what people are betting at what locations at FanDuel. If it gets a limit. So it's like, okay, Houston Cougars over 131, guys limited to 750 or 1,000, whatever. Guy wants 5K. Yeah. You can see that on the trade. Like you'll see
he
that
asked
like
for 5K.
Or at the window for 5K. So you can go, you see that in your like in the group chat between the supervisors and the traders. And then even if you're not working, like if you're off hours. So I have guys at locations, FanDuel, MGM, Caesars, who all have that look thing, and they'll send me what the traders are saying. They're like, this is good, we don't want any more. So what does that tell you? Action's probably sharp.
Yeah.
So these are things to like, you can tell if you're going into like the book side, which there's nothing wrong with that, even though people have like hate the books. You can see all the stuff that people are betting, and you can get it without having to pay for odds jam, having a DV. The lines, like you can just go to a screen or whatever you want to pick to choose the best line from there. Then you can make additional money. Like there's other ways to do it without having to DV and spend a lot of time like EV betting. It's kind of my point.
Yeah. And I think it's also better information because it's more, it's harder to access. To access that information, you have to get a job at FanDuel. Or you have to get a job at. Yeah, or you know somebody who, you know. But to know those people, you probably – that took a little bit of time, right? Whereas anybody can open up Odds Jam and be like, oh, okay, this is 4%, you know, bam. Not super valuable. But if it's like, oh, wow, this action that we can only see, you know, in the back end software is you know, highlighted as super sharp, and I know that, and the number that – it got bet at is available at six other books. Like there was a time when I didn't end up taking the job, but like was considering, this was like a couple years ago, considering mm-hmm. being a trader just so, because I knew I could still bet my own stuff and I wanted mm-hmm. to see some order flow. And like, ultimately I didn't think, I thought I wasn't, I was worried about like the time commitment and just like the ability to do my own stuff too. So I didn't end up taking it, but like it crossed my mind because that's really valuable, valuable stuff. And I would have only taken that job just to see order flow. Like, so when Aaron's saying like how helpful it was for him to see order flow as a mover, like I'm reiterating, if you're in plus EV betting right now and you don't really know what to do, consider moving, consider putting yourself in some situation where you see sharp order flow. And then if you're trying to make the jump from just standard, you know, devigging to what I would call like more nuanced, well-rounded betting like that, I don't think there's a better way to do it.
Yeah, it really just but you have to make sure you have the outs to be able to adhere to the needs of like the originators. You have to be able to get like decent money down. You can't just wake up one night and be like, ah, moving sounds amazing. It's a lot of work. You got a lot of people to deal with. You're going to have to become a lot of partners because you need accounts. You can't find enough accounts by yourself. You have to, most of originators will make you guarantee their portion. So even if you get stiffed, you are on the hook for that portion, which is, you have to understand that you still owe them that money. You committed to that. Whether you get paid out is a whole nother discussion. So sometimes you do take losses on games. Like that's 100% a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Order flow is king. It really is.
Well, let's talk about partnering with originators and like, there's a few interesting nuances to it, but like, how about let's start with how you evaluate like someone who's coming to you asking to get down. Like, let's assume that maybe they're two options. One is they're well known and you're pretty much like, okay, I've heard they win, you know, it's an easier choice. They're betting bigger stuff. The other is, let's say you have someone who's kind of a, you know, do you ever work with someone who might be just like a lone wolf, who isn't part of like a syndicate or a bigger group, but you think like they're kind of sharp in one thing and you kind of mentor them, you know, they're giving, you know, solid plays, but you kind of like mentor them into helping them get more money down and understanding how this all works.
Yeah. It's a lot of different factors. So if you're well known in the industry, generally I will go for a reference check. Even if you're well known, because there are a lot of fakers. Like a lot of people say they win and they aren't winning, or they say they win and they're breaking even and the real money that they're making is booking.
Interesting. And how big of a issue? I don't know. How prevalent is that?
I'd say of the biggest sharps that you know, or biggest like people that you know, I'd say over 50% are booking, and booking large.
That's surprising. I mean, I know we've talked about this like offline, but like, yeah, that surprised me to hear for sure.
Or they were former traders and they're doing some side stuff for like books, not trading stuff, but like stuff with the books, not in a bad way, more of, I don't really know specifics, so I prefer not to like discuss the specifics, but they do, as some people might say, carry security risks.
Yep. Gotcha.
So that's one way, is to really evaluate whether someone wins, because if you're in the community and if you do become a mover, anyone that who is like on EV betting, you can reach out to me. I would say I know 95% of the people that you'll run into, and I'll know whether they win or not just because of references that I have that I've built up over the years, or I've worked with them prior. Most people I'd say that you think win, do win, but not as big as you do, but not as big as you think, I'd say is like the more proper answer. But they're like, it depends on how much they're winning, whether you want to even consider it. I personally prefer smaller originators. They want less. They don't do as bad as you think. They probably do about the same, maybe like slightly worse, maybe slightly better, depending on the market. But they're attacking smaller markets. So you, if you have enough outs, you can still get a sizable fill, and they only want 500 to 1,000, which is nothing.
That's pretty wide. That's pretty low. I mean, for originating.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you know like what you're looking for golf, which is a relatively small market, all things considered.
Yeah, for sure.
500 to 1,000 on a golf, is it really worth it? For your perspective.
No, exactly. I wouldn't give that info out for that, Phil.
Right. So if you're getting info for 500 to 1,000, and that's pretty good.
That's really good. Yeah. But it's good. You know, I imagine they have smaller bankrolls, right?
Or they just don't want to like risk a lot. Or some of them want to be on free rolls, which if you think they win.
You definitely put them on a free roll for sure.
Right. If you know they win. Yeah. If you know they win, free rolls are great. If you have the bankroll to sustain it. Yes. You have to make sure they win though. So some of the guys will come to me and they'll basically, a lot of the times it'll be almost like a business pitch where you got like a slide deck, not exactly a slide deck, but it's okay. Here's my Excel sheet. I'm not going to show you the model, but here are all my statistics that I have, my R squared adjusted, my ROI on this market, my ROI in this market, my XROI on this market, my XROI on this market. And you can kind of evaluate whether you think they're running hot or they just have a good grasp of their ROI. So my hockey guy does really, really well. And he bets team totals and everything. Team totals, he's running at like an 18% ROI, slightly over expected.
Sure. They
expected like 14.
It's bananas though.
Which is still bananas. Yeah. Like, he doesn't want a lot. He wants a free roll, which I'm cool with.
Yo, hit me up.
And he, but his puck line that he has is running at like a negative 3% ROI when his expected is 7. So the different, like, you're not going to run exactly as expected, but when you, and his totals and money lines are running like about expected. But when you take all the data and put it together, it's pretty close to expected. So I think, and he has over 1,000 bets. So I think he just has a good grasp of his expected ROI.
And how much of the evaluation is listening to them talk about the sport too? Because like, especially if you're looking at like model stats that don't include like back tested model stats, like of course you run into like overfitting. But when you're talking about ROI and expected ROI, that, you know, obviously that means more. And then like, is there an added sprinkle on top of like listening to their strategy and like just kind of idiot checking it, that it's like at least feasible that it should win against the market?
I generally don't check that stuff.
Got it.
I'm a pretty big risk taker in regard to like who I
work
with.
That's why you're on the Risk Takers podcast.
I'll generally work with almost anyone to begin with. But I'll tell pretty quickly whether you're going to win or not.
So it's worth it to give a lot of chances for smaller size, just so when you do find somebody who crushes, it scales like super high, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things that I think that people aren't taking into a factor when they're looking at whether someone wins or not. You can have ROI, you can have XROI, you can have win percentage, you have this, that, and the next, CLV. In my opinion, you throw all those away. You look at the cover margin, like for a college basketball game. If your net cover margin is plus like 2, plus 2.5 on a cover, you're doing well. I don't care about CLV. I don't care about anything else. I mean, obviously, it does matter in some regards. A slight hyperbole, say I don't care about it.
No, that's interesting.
I think cover margin is a lot more important than people take into account. But then you also have to evaluate shooting percentages, I think. Or not necessarily shot quality, but like similar to shot quality. Because if they're chucking a lot of threes and that's the reason why they're covering a lot, well, then it's like, okay, that's probably good variance.
Or at least it certainly could be good variance.
Well, if they're shooting 8 of 10 from 3, I'd say that's just good variance.
Yeah, of course.
If they're shooting 4 of 10 from 3, okay, maybe slight good variance, and maybe they're just good shooting team. But if you're looking at like a 7 or 8 to 10 out of 10, even like 10 out of 13, something like that, and you're covering by 25. Well, I wonder why. Because they're chucking it from half, and they're Caitlin Clarking and just making everything.
Yeah. Yeah. So at least they're covering by 25.
Right. But then you have to consider basically the difference between a winning and losing season for most originators is flipping games from losses to wins at the buzzer. Or close to that.
That's crazy. And you know what? I saw Rufus's tweet, or his Telemachus. One of them, about like their the games that they were winning when it got pushed into OT and then flipped into OT or whatever.
Negative half a million.
Brutal, dude. That's why, Rufus, you guys just stick with golf, man.
No, you don't want, you want him in college basketball.
Yeah, I want him in college basketball. Actually, sure, but
you want less people in your market, right?
No, that's absolutely true. I'm well supportive of Rufus's college basketball efforts. He's a great golf better.
They've won a lot this year. I do some work with them. They do well in college basketball. I mean, I think something to evaluate is cover margin that people are not really taking into account, whether it's because they think it's an edge that they have to like evaluate a different metric than everyone else is saying, rather than CLV.
Do you use cover margin in like more, like for your hockey guy, for like it's lower scoring, right? So
it's a little harder to evaluate like cover margin. Yeah. I've seen his stuff. I just believe it wins.
It seems like it wins.
The thing with hockey is, so in my opinion, the hardest sport to win is NFL, which I think is everyone else's opinion. Very close second is baseball.
I hear everyone complain about baseball.
It's very difficult. There's a lot of factors. And then the next one's hockey.
Interesting. So hockey's harder than NBA.
Yeah, I think.
Wow.
You can get tendencies in NBA.
That's right. And I mean, I guess you could also be somebody who's just, you know, plugged in to injury news and just quickly betting too in NBA.
That's another thing is if you take it seriously and you have connects, which you will develop if you decide to like progressively go and choose a sport, whether it's NBA, college basketball, NHL, and you build those connects, injury news and information is next tier, but like the tier right below like order flow, I'd say, even maybe on the same tier. Order flow, the thing with order flow is if you don't have the information, you can detect information pretty quickly.
Yep.
We've got, as you build out your network, you're going to develop people on teams. So we have people on like a couple NBA teams, a couple college teams who will feed us info. And they're like, okay, this guy's out. And you'll see like, I don't know if you know John Rothstein for CBS for college basketball.
Not deep he's the
Ian Rappaport Adam Schefter for college basketball.
Yeah, makes sense.
So he'll post something and be like, this guy's game time decision. I text the guy, is he a game time decision? He's like, that information is incorrect, he is starting. And so like if the market thinks he's a GTD and we know he's starting and playing, or we know the reason why he's not starting, or we know the reason why this guy's not playing, and it's not available, okay, then you have to consider, okay, where's the market edge? And then even after he gets knocked out, what psychologically does it change for that team?
That's interesting. And you have to you have to know ball to know that.
You don't even have to know ball. You have to know people in the place.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes, so, to get the information.
Right. But even beyond the information, it's okay. Like a booster at a college basketball team, He's hung out with the players. He knows what players are – like what the connects between the players are. Who likes who doesn't like who. Is this person a cancer to the team or is he a benefit to the team? Even if he's a star, he might be a cancer.
Yep.
Even if he's a star, he might be a cancer. So his net advantageous to the team could be negative. And if he doesn't play, that might be good for like the morale of the team. And so these are things to consider when, if you have all this information.
And that's when you're, you know, you're focusing deep in a market, in a sport, right? But you, yeah, like we talked about, you know, Rufus and Telemachus. It's like, you know, how many originators are you working with that are multi-sport compared to originators that are one sport? Just by a percentage breakdown.
So there's a couple different. I'd say the breakdown is like a lot different than that. It's college. So college football, college basketball is one sport, except for Rufus.
They're combined.
Yeah, for the most part, college basketball and college football. People that do college football will stop at like November-ish, or might have small small bets going into November and like bowl season. They're switching to college basketball.
Okay.
Some people that do college basketball do NBA. NFL is its own monster. With then some people will do like other ancillary sports. They might move. But once you're in the community, you kind of get the order flow yourself. You develop those relationships. People want to help you out. So it's kind of a lot easier that way. But things you have to consider. Most people are one sport. Or like a two or three small sports, I'd say.
Okay. Because I think it's important to know. Like I preach like specialize. I'm sure there'll be hopefully, you know, a time in my life where I add a sport. It's certainly it's certainly a goal of mine to add a sport, but do it, you know, at a high level where I feel like I can devote the time required to like do it well. But, you know, for people who are just starting out, I really preach specialization since, like you said, even if you don't have the inside connects, you're plugged into the information that's going on in the sport and you know what certain injuries and certain, you know, changes will impact possibly before, it's baked into the line. Plus, you know, it's hard to model. It's hard to build a database. So you have to spend a lot of time building, you know, a database for a sport, which is secondary, which is the first thing, but you know, it takes a lot of time. But if you know the sport on top of that, you're kind of giving yourself extra ways to win. And if you have order flow, also like, you know, you have extra ways to win. And if you know how to play like a top down strategy, you have extra ways to win. So it's like specialized sport wise, but be kind of a generalist in betting. Like, do you consider yourself a generalist? And how many originators are also moving? Like, I'm curious because we always bucket people like, oh, Aaron is a mover and, you know, so-and-so is an originator. But it's like you're saying that the lines might be a little more blurred. Like, do you even believe like these buckets exist or is it a lot more fluid?
It's a lot more fluid than people think. And I don't even know if I'd say a lot of originators move. It really depends on the originator and depends on the markets they want to attack. But I'd say a lot of originators will bet other people's stuff. I don't know if it's to the capacity of giving back a percentage, but it's more so, okay, I do college basketball, you do NBA, or you do college football. Most people that do college basketball do college football, so this is kind of fair. A moot point, but I do college basketball, you do NBA, you do NHL. I'll give you my college basketball, but I want your NHL in exchange.
Yep. Information trade.
So like, going back to your specialization point, it helps to specialize. You specialize, your buddy can, or someone else, you know, once you get it, if you're good, people will trade information. It's very normal. So you do college basketball, you're good at that. You run at a good clip. The other guy does NHL. He does well. So you both specialize and then you swap information. Everyone wins. You don't really have to exert any more time besides betting the other person's stuff for yourself or for the other person, depending on what deal you have with the other person. That's like, ultimately it comes down to what deals you have with people.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the way to get information people want is to do it well. So it's like, if you do like three sports, okay. No one's going to want to trade with you, but if you do one sport well, everyone's going to want to trade with you.
Yeah, it's very clear cut. If you're good at what you do, people want you on their team. If you don't, the thing is, no one's going to get out of bed for a 1% to 1% ROI unless it's the NFL.
Yep.
So,
well said.
Yeah, I mean, that's really like you want that 4% to 5% ROI where you can bet like a decent chunk. If you should have outs, like, and like if you're deep in the space, you will have outs, and you're good. People will come with you to outs. I get outs every single day. I'm sure everyone like who does it seriously gets outs like consistently. But that's all it comes down to: how much do you win? If you don't win, no one's gonna give you shit.
And when you're evaluating outs, I think this is important because, like, certainly, yeah, like I know I get hit up on Twitter a lot. Like we work still with most of our own people, but you know, a lot of people either are hitting people up, you know, with accounts who might want to work with an originator, or originators are kind of getting hit up. How are you evaluating? How are you evaluating people who are hitting you up saying, I have these accounts? Like, what matters, what doesn't?
So legal wise right now, we're not really taking anyone on.
Yeah.
We got a good like legal basis, and legals, it's always like one text away. It's not really super hard to get a legal for various reasons. If you have the network, that's ultimately comes down to the network. Offshore, same thing. It's a lot harder. See, the problem with your method versus mine is your method, you can send stuff out and you're generally not going to destroy the market.
Yes.
Like, you can send it out to a couple people and they'll get you a fill and the market's not going to be killed. If I send it out to people, it's going to, it, you got 30 seconds max.
Yeah.
Like 2 minutes max. Like, there's a certain people that I know that win that don't move the market. Crazy. But most of the people, because they're sending it out to other movers too. So it's not like I'm the only one getting, and we're getting down with size, like very, very large sizes. Because we have to bet for ourselves, you have to bet for them. The other people have to bet for themselves, they have to bet for them. So when you consider all those things, the liquidity that you're total getting down prior to splits is the excess between me and all the other movers that are working with originators. You could be getting down 50 to 100K. That's going to move a line.
Yeah.
Like, whether you try or not. So it's kind of hard to like do the send model, as people talk about, unless you're working with like one person. But for PPH wise, as long as the thing has, depending on the skin, 500 to 1,000 credit, I'll at least give them a try.
Yeah. Okay. That's actually lower than I thought you were going to say. But I guess like it's a matter of just stacking these.
It's a matter of stacking them, is absolutely right. The thing is, if you get a 5K credit, right, and you run it up and you get stiffed, and that's a big credit line, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And you get stiffed. Oh, there goes that. What are you going to do? Like, you can't do anything.
Right.
You're, depending on the person who you work with, some people guarantee your number, some people don't. They're just like, you should be guaranteeing. If you give an account to someone, for the most part, you should be guaranteeing if you're on risk. If you're on risk, you're making enough where you should be guaranteeing the other partner, the sharp or the mover or the originator, their portion. If you're on free roll, it's a completely different discussion because you're on a smaller percentage. So the upside for the originator, they get, and they understand the risk there. So
like, I'll say when we put people on free roll, like, of course we guarantee the risk ourselves. It's not.
I'm saying from a like, if you're taking risk on the PPH and giving it to a sharp, you should be guaranteeing the sharp their percentage, unless they do something crazy. Like you say, I only want to win $1,000 and they're winning 5,000. Okay. That's a situation where I'm like, you know what? You shouldn't be guaranteeing because they didn't follow your guidelines.
Right.
But if you say max win 1,000 and they're at like 1,200, that's close enough that you should be guaranteeing it. Because there are certain things that you have to consider from a sharp perspective. If they see the account at 900, they're going to continue betting. And if they go sweep the board, okay, it's kind of hard to evaluate whether to stop or not. But if they're on a free roll where you get that extra percentage, I don't think the sharp should be guaranteed their amount, because they're just the book is, or the person just going to get killed.
Totally agree. Actually, the PPH I saw, I think this might've actually been in the RAS Discord, but there's like, it's in, I have this like weird fascination with reading the Skiffs and Scams forum on RAS. I don't like, I just like open it up and I read that and I go back to my other Discords. That's one of
the ones that I always take a look at.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just maybe the drama of it or whatnot. But, someone put out the theory that like the PPH world is kind of getting hit because they're losing their middle, like the middle class of bettors to like DraftKings and FanDuel. And what they're getting is they're getting a lot of massive whales who want to play on credit and are degens. And then they're getting like the sharpest of the sharps. Do you agree with that? Has the PPH landscape changed recently? You know, what's your thoughts?
Agree and disagree. And here's why I agree and disagree. At the end of the day, I think we'll always prosper. To some degree, because people like betting on credit, even the middle people. I like betting on credit, even that have the money. Like, that's not the issue. It's I don't like having to deposit, withdraw. I rather do the weekly
settle,
right? Even if I win or lose, it doesn't really matter. That's not really the point. It's the weekly settle just makes life a lot easier for everyone. So that's one aspect. Another aspect that PPH won't change until California, Texas, and Florida. Florida already has Hard Rock, but they need more stuff there.
Yep.
It's not going to change until all three of those league laws, in my opinion. Because people are going to bet. Like, it doesn't matter the legalization status, people will bet. So until those three, I'd be a lot more skeptical once those three become legal and become like more open.
That makes a lot of sense.
Another thing is like New York. Well, when you put restrictions on states on what they can bet and they want to bet in state, there's only really a couple options people can do. So unless it's a free market where everyone can bet pretty much whatever, which won't happen from state laws to the operator's choices, I don't think there really is a way that PPH space just like evaporates, I guess is the answer. But I think it could like turn to the negative too. I do agree with some of the sentiment that the middleman is gone. It just depends on if the person likes to bet on credit or not.
Okay. So you're still like, PPH is still a super viable.
I think, but like, I mean, that doesn't mean you don't get stiffed. Like I calculate about a high end 10%, low end 5% stiff rate a year. So yeah, I'm assuming I'm not going to collect 5 to 10%.
You have to do that, and that's something like I touched on actually. I think the last podcast I did, which was like a Q&A, it's like if you're getting stiffed 0% of the time, you're doing something wrong. Like, you're not taking on enough risk, and you're limiting your upside. So like, you hear Aaron talk about, he factors this in like that. That's, you know, that's how you got to do it. Factor it in, be prepared for it, and then when it happens. Not if, but when it happens, you know.
Yeah,
that's just what happens. It's
but that doesn't even go beyond the PPH space, though. Like, if you're partnering with people on legals, they will stiff you.
Yep,
like that happens too. That's not a or runners. You think a runner's good? He might be doing some shit on the side where he's degenning and stuff and using your money, and you just have no clue.
Totally.
So you have to like calculate these numbers into your projections. They are tax write-offs for what it's worth. So like, yes. You have to, like, you can write them off. So it's not a huge deal, but you have to be aware that these stuff happen. You can't monitor all your, like, if especially if you're scaling to a significant degree, you can't monitor every single thing.
And that's okay.
Right. But that's when it becomes, are you too big and you need to hire someone?
Yeah.
I'm currently a one-man show. So
that's crazy to me. We talked about this on the phone, call, like on what your next steps are with scaling, because it seems like your next steps would be hiring out a team, right?
Yeah. I mean, the goal is where you basically almost Spanky-esque. I mean, obviously Spanky's in a different like category. So, but he does like, he has like a lot of employees, I think 18 to 20, if I remember correctly. I mean, I talked to those guys decently. So the goal would basically, you have your own team of originators who you have, then you have people who like manage the accounts, and you have accountants who will do the like numbers yes. for you. And then so you're important. Kind of almost like a face, I guess. Yep. Like Spanky on a day-to-day, I'm sure he does not do that much work.
Yeah, right. Like he's kind of he has the relationships, which you have, mm-hmm. which are so valuable. Right. And it can't be, you can't shortcut your way into having a good network. So like by that point, you're already incredibly valuable because you probably know the originators that to bring in. You know mm-hmm. the people to get accounts. You probably even know the accountants. Like, and that all happens because you've put in the work, you understand the industry, and like you don't have to log every bet or send every order, but like you're still valuable because you've put in the work, you understand how everything works, and you can kind of put your, you know, hand on the wheel if it's a little bumpy, but like you don't have to do everything yourself.
Yeah, I mean that there you have to understand who you can trust and not. A big thing is ultimately whether or not you can trust someone, but beyond that is okay, let's say two people go to work, like do work together, like you set me up with some people.
Yeah.
If things go well, there generally is some like return for the person that sets it up. If like people are good people. Like yeah. That's generally how it goes. It's the people that people don't want to work with is you set someone up with someone, they basically backstab you and they do their own stuff together. And unless like there's an understanding that this is like how it's going to operate and the person just more of like a middleman to set up the, because they like the both
yeah.
entities, which is good too. Like that happens. But making sure everyone is like fulfilled. If you do a setup and you do like make a lot of money, and there's an understanding that you did make a lot of money there, you send back like a portion. So like I've had deals where we've made a lot of money and the person who sets us up, we give them like a thing that a lot of people do. I don't know how everyone is, but we like split an expensive watch between three people.
Oh,
so everyone like paid like a small portion of the watch. Like it was a significant watch. Everyone paid a small portion, but at the end of the day, that portion was so small in the grand scheme of things of how much we made, we didn't care.
Right.
Right. And it's more important to keep those relationships good than to like
yes.
not spend the money, in my opinion. And other people will agree with me there.
I agree with you. I can't agree more. Like the way we operate is like, we'll, if it's a question, we'll just spend the money or give the benefit of the doubt, or, you know, like, do you get screwed sometimes? Sure. But like, you want to be the person that's always thought of positively in, mm-hmm. in these relationships. And what you're doing is you have to be less worried, in my opinion, about your downside, which is, oh, I spent two grand on this watch, and more concerned with what matters way more, like by a factor of 100 is the upside, where the person that you split that watch with is like, wow, that was honestly super nice of Aaron. I didn't expect anything. I just liked, you know, Aaron and so-and-so. But, you know, now I'm always going to send people to Aaron because I like him a lot more.
Yeah.
I mean, be that person.
That's not just a betting thing. That's like a life. I mean, buying a watch for someone or something like that is completely different than like a friendship that people set you up with. Like that's like, these are two different like things. The reason why we made so much money is because of this, like the introduction. So which yeah. makes sense of why you go out and do buy him a gift that's expensive. But like that's you don't just backstab on someone, I guess is my or go beyond them and where they're like, all right, why, what's going on here? Of what's the relationship entirely? Why are you like, often sometimes it's like these two people become more friends than you two are friendly. Like yeah. those two people talk more than like the original two people, which is where I think there's a problem. Not necessarily okay. a problem, but like it's not necessarily a problem. I guess that's the wrong word, but it just doesn't look good, I guess is the like answer.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you say. I mean, like, of course, like certain people are just going to become good friends because they mesh. Like it's not, I don't think it's terrible. But I think what you're the main point is that you're, you know, very, you're trying to do the right thing and, you know, put yourself in a situation where, yeah, you might get screwed a couple of times, but you're always going to be the person that's thought of more positively. And that there's like some game theory study where it's like, give first, and then if you don't get back, then you don't continue your relationship. But like being the person that gives first and then keeps giving if the other person gives back is like the GTO way to approach life, I guess. So
yeah,
I have to go back and see the study or something, but it's like a quid pro quo where you give first, basically. It's like the ideal life strat for anybody who's made it this far, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, once you're in, the community is so small, you do not want your name to be like bad, associated with bad. Like you can't, it's not even about like, it's beyond about being a good person, which I think is like, obviously being a good person helps in every single regard. But it's almost a survival.
Like yeah.
If you want to be the guy, which some people do, but they don't know how to achieve, you have to take these steps to become the guy. You have to make sure people think of you positively. So then you're the guy that people go to when they have a problem or they have this, or they have someone they think is a good originator that wants to get down who might be small. You don't want them going to like someone else where that originator could be really good or that guy originator could suck. You don't know until you see their stuff. You want them to be the first person who you have a first crack of all small originators, I guess, is like the end goal.
That's huge. And that's like deal flow. Like you're putting yourself out there to source good deal flow, which is what everybody tries to do in the business world anyway. So I know we chatted briefly about it, but it's like, I'm curious to see what you do next. Like, I don't know if you thought more about it. If this is, you know, your post-college plan or not, you don't need to put a flag in the ground on the podcast, but you know, you're well-trained to do multiple things. So I'm interested.
I'm a multifaceted person. At the end of the day, I think I'm most associated with I associate myself with like being entrepreneurial and doing things in the regards of, okay, starting something, building it up, and then seeing where it goes from there. The struggle that I have occurred, I don't know with other people's struggles have. My struggle is, okay, I started from basically like nothing in sports betting, gotten to pretty close to like a good standing, close to the top, this is not I'm nowhere near Spanky, I'm nowhere near like other people, but like if you do a hierarchical of like where I am, I'd say like I'm decently positioned and so I like the grind up to the top. I like starting from nothing and like getting to where I am. It's more so of like, is this worth it on a day to day? I have other business aspirations. I love this. I love the. It's not even about the betting anymore. It's about the people. Like if I made no money from betting, I'd probably continue. I'm assuming all my bills and stuff were covered. I love the list. Like everything's good. If everything was covered and I made no extra money and I was like had enough cash to do whatever, within reason, right? I'm not going to go out and like buy a private jet, stuff like that. But like live my life currently as I am, and nothing changes, I'd most likely, just like be okay with everything. And just, I love the people. The people are the best.
Me too.
That's the end of it. Like I really do enjoy talking to people, chatting and seeing like where their heads are at in the grand scheme of things, because most of my stuff is bouncing off ideas of other people where they are smarter or same intellect as me and they can really elevate me as a person. And I really enjoy that. Like everyone here is a grinder.
Yes.
And like tries really hard to do what they like their portion. And I really appreciate that. And that's where like my like niche is. Like it's the grind to get up to the top rather than staying and finding ways to stay there rather than sitting on your laurels and just you know, being okay with it.
I couldn't say it better myself. And it's kind of like why I love this podcast, because I realize everyone who comes on basically is just like a crazy grinder. And like me too. I work all the time and I love it. And that's great. And I love talking to people who also are in that niche of grinding, entrepreneurial, thinking differently. Like you have to be a little weird or think a little differently to decide this is the life for you, but it creates this community of people that, of course, like people troll each other on Twitter and whatnot. It's not always like the best, you know, the best vibes, but like overall the people are great, super interesting. And like you said, I've learned so many things from people in this community that I've just like been positive life EV that I'm like, I'm eternally grateful. And I would also do it just to be a part of the community and not for the money if I didn't make money doing it.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely like same way. Like if I left today, I'd still talk to the same people I talk to every single day, just because honestly, like I have my friends from home. I have my friends from all different aspects of life, but this is like a just different group of friends. I can't really explain it.
Some of your friends are like 60-year-old construction tycoons. You know, like how many people in college have friends like that? You know, it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a like, I mean, outside, I'm talking specifically the sharp betting community. I mean, young, one of the younger guys in like the sharp betting side. EV betting is like more the younger crowd. From my experiences, I could be entirely wrong. I don't know who
everyone that's probably listening. True.
Like on a day-to-day to the pod and like in your Discords and stuff. That's another thing. I don't really have much time to be in Discord. It's mostly like my Telegram. That's where I live. Yeah. 24/7. Yeah. So you, like everyone I'm talking to is like 40, 50, 30s, mid 30s. And you got spring chicken me, 23 years old in college. Like these guys have kids and some of their kids are like 2 years
your age.
And I'm like, holy.
They're setting you up with their daughter, you know. They're like,
that's already happened. I'm like, thanks. Thanks. I'll pass. Or like their sister, their younger sister. And I'm like, I really appreciate the offer that you think I'm good enough for like a family member for you. But from previous experiences, this never ends well. Business and personal, you got to separate.
I mean, it's an EV decision, you know, like the downside's super high, the upside could be really high though, too. When you're talking
the likelihood about, that it ends well
is high.
So low.
Oh, ends well. Like,
ends well is so low. And that it just even amicable is like, it's the best situation,
right?
Ending amicable is the best situation. So I just is like, thanks for considering me and thinking of me so highly. But
for sure,
I respectfully pass.
I love it. And this is, I like when there's really important nuggets like this, like whether to date this younger sister of someone you're moving for. if it's plus EV or minus EV at the end of the podcast, because it gives people that value at the end that you're not going to get this advice in the first 10 minutes, you know? So you have to stay to the end.
You have to come stuff. To the end.
But yeah, man, I appreciate, this is the longest episode I kind of thought it was going to be, but, you never know. No, it's good. I'm actually trying to let them go a little longer. You know, I think like 2 hours is the longest I've seen just any podcast. So I, in my mind, you know, we're at hour 45, definitely will be the longest. Like, I think that people, like myself, if it's a good long podcast, I really like it. You know, I mean, it doesn't really matter to me if it's an hour or 2 hours.
For me, I'm going to Vegas Friday, so it's like perfect. Like, so it's harder to listen to like 20 minute if you're going to go on like a long 5 hour trip. So you got one or couple and you're just like, there you go.
That's right. Like you listen to podcasts when you have a chunk of time already. So why not? Why not offer them 2 hours of great content without having to click something else? So that's what me and Aaron are trying to do here for everybody traveling to March Madness. And
if anyone's in Vegas, I know this is dropping Thursday, March Madness.
Yep.
Thursday morning. if you see this, I will be in Vegas Thursday, Friday, Saturday, leaving Sunday morning. Happy to talk, whatever, play gamble, you name it. I'll be there and we can discuss more like in person. You just shoot me a DM and we'll be good.
That's awesome. Where are you posting up, Circa?
I'm in all mashing.
Yeah, yeah, you're just going to be mashing kiosks.
I'm in so many different places. No, I'm not going to mash kiosks. I have so many different things that like I'm plus wanting for like six different things that I'm like someone else is invited to that I'm going to as well. So I'm kind of just go with the flow. I'm just going to post. I'm going to shoot tweet out, be like, oh, at this or where's everyone? We can blah, blah, blah. I'll be at Circa. Yeah. I'll be at MGM. The thing is Circa's on Fremont. So it's not like it's on strip. It's not the easiest thing. I'm going to have to Uber. But it just depends on where everyone else is. Like I'm seeing partners. I'm seeing this. I'm seeing that. I'm just trying to strategize where is the best like spot given the time.
Well, a good spot for anybody listening who's in Vegas would be hitting Aaron up and just getting yourself getting plugged in, right? Like that matters. Yeah. And it starts with just meeting one person and, you know, goes from there. So hit him up. And thank you for joining. This has been an epic episode. I'm super happy with how this has turned out and you giving, you know, 2 hours of your time. It's awesome. Thank you.
I enjoy it. I appreciate the offer to come on. I've been watching it for a while and think you guys got a really good set of previous guests and I'm happy to be the next one.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, thanks everybody for watching and, you know, hit up Aaron and we'll see you on the next episode.